Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Self-confidence, you can be sure of this. An area where you have self-confidence is an area where you will eventually fall. You know, the person who says, I would never do that. I'd never fall to that. I could never. The Bible warns us, if any man thinks he stands, let him take heed lest he.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian concludes his teaching on John chapter 13 in a message titled, A New Commandment. Now here's Pastor Brian.
He was numbered among the apostles, but he wasn't there in his heart. Judas is a frightening character. To think that there is that possibility. And he, to me, he always stands there as a warning to make sure that we are sincere, that we're genuine in our faith. So there was leaning on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. And most people agree that John's referring to himself here. And Simon Peter, therefore, motioned to him to ask who it was to whom he spoke, or of whom he spoke. Then leaning back on Jesus' breast, he said to him, Lord, who is it? Now, we don't know for sure how things were arranged. They were evidently around a table, not one like Leonardo da Vinci imagined. They didn't have tables and chairs like that. They would have been around a lower table, and they would have been reclining on sort of on cushions. And John was in a position where he could lean his head back and have this conversation with Jesus that would have been relatively private. Now, we don't know how things were arranged. Peter was evidently not close enough to the Lord to ask the question, and so he motions to John to find out who is being talked about here. But it is quite possible, and I think highly probable, that Judas would have held the place of honor at this meal. And we know that he's in proximity to Jesus because in a moment we're going to see Jesus is going to hand him something. And so Jesus will also speak something to Judas that evidently not everybody else heard, or at least nobody else understood it. And it could very well be that here at this meal, Jesus was offering Judas a way out one last time. Satan has already put it into the heart of Judas to betray him. This is something that's been stirring in him. He's been moving in this direction. But now the hour has come, the moment has come, and yet it seems that here Jesus is still offering Judas a way out of the situation. And so Jesus answered John's question. His question, Lord, who is it? Who's going to betray you? Jesus answered, it is he to whom I shall give a piece of bread when I have dipped it. Now, evidently, Jesus said this only in the hearing of John. Nobody else heard what Jesus said. And John, at least at the time, didn't expose that. And so having dipped the bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. Now listen. Now, after the piece of bread, Satan entered him. You see, that's the thing right there. It seems that the piece of bread, that was the moment. Some commentators have said, and I think there's probably something to it, that in offering Judas the piece of bread, it was like a peace offering. It was like it was one final invitation to change your mind. Come with me. Go in a different direction. And when Judas took that piece of bread, instead of embracing Jesus, that was that moment of decision. And at that moment, Satan entered him. And then Jesus said to him, "What you do, do quickly." But no one at the table knew for what reason he said this to him. Some thought it was because Judas had the money box that Jesus had said to him, "Buy those things that we need for the feast," or that he should give something to the poor. And having received the piece of bread, he went out immediately, and it was night. You know, oftentimes John, he has a habit in this gospel of making little statements that will have a dual sort of a meaning. And no doubt this is one of those statements. He went out immediately, and it was night. It was night, but it was really night. It was the hour of darkness. The hour of darkness had now come. Judas, possessed by the devil now, given himself over to Satan's suggestion to be his tool, he now, you know, is off to the chief priest to betray Jesus. And so the night has come. Remember, Jesus earlier had said, I must work the works of him who sent me. He said, we must work while it is day, for the night is coming. And now the night has arrived. So when he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is also glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and glorify him immediately. Little children, I shall be with you a little while longer. You will seek me. And as I said to the Jews, where I am going, you cannot come. So now I say to you, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." So now Judas has gone out. And here now Jesus will share these very intimate things with these men. He's going to let them know now that he's leaving. They still haven't, that hasn't registered with them yet at this point. But in this time, that as he speaks to them, he's going to reveal to them that he's leaving. He's going back to the Father. But the Holy Spirit is going to come. And he's going to reveal many wonderful things. But he begins with this: a new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Now, the commandment to love one another isn't what Jesus is referring to as the new commandment, because that was a commandment that they had already received through Moses. The law said that they were to love each other. The newness of the commandment is this: that you love one another as I have loved you. Now, remember what we read at the first part of the chapter. And having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the uttermost. He's saying, this is my commandment, that you love each other. Don't fight with each other for power. Don't try to have dominion over one another, but love each other, serve each other like I showed you tonight. Wash one another's feet. Humble yourselves before each other. Serve one another. Give your life for one another. And Jesus said that it would be by this that all would know that, or all would know who were his disciples. And again, this has been one of the great failures of God's people throughout the ages, the failure to love each other. And how there's been so much infighting within the church over the centuries, so much arguing and bickering and hostility, even hatred sometimes. And it's been a very sad thing. And of course, people look at that and they don't see anything attractive about that. They don't see anything special in that. They don't see anything that would convince them that following Jesus is anything that you ought to take seriously. I mentioned last week this book that's been written by Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion. And this is a book where he's just attacking the whole idea of God, attacking the Christian faith. But, you know, the sad thing is a lot of his ammunition is taken from church history. He's able to draw upon the failure of Christians to do what Jesus said, the failure of church leaders to be servant leaders, the failure of believers to love each other. He's able to draw upon these things from history to, you know, fortify his case against anybody taking the Christian faith seriously. And to me, that's always the saddest thing. When we give the enemies of God the opportunity to blaspheme, that is, you know, as the saying goes, that's shooting yourself in the feet. You know, if you're in a battle and you shoot yourself in the feet, guess what? You're out of the battle. Your progress has come to a halt. And the church so often has done this. We've shot ourselves in the feet. We don't need anybody else to attack us. We do a fine job of devouring ourselves from within. If we would just take the words of Jesus, the example of Jesus, the commandments of Jesus, take them to heart. He tells us to love each other. And if you find yourself in a position where you're not loving another Christian, guess what? You need to do something about that. You find yourself in a position where you have hatred toward another Christian, animosity, bitterness. I can't stand that person. Oh man, I'm not going to church. What if they're there? What if I run into them? You know, that is the kind of thing that leads to this horrible testimony and the very opposite of what Jesus intended. It's a commandment, he said, that I give you. And the commandment is this, that you love each other, that you humble yourselves. Now, I have seen people who would get up and preach a good sermon on this, but not put it into practice. It's very easy to deceive ourselves. It's very easy to justify our behavior at times. It's very easy to justify our attitudes. And you might, or I might at some time, be able to look at a person and say, well, you know, I have a right to feel this way about them. But not if I'm loving. If I can't get along with a person because they're not reciprocating that love, then my position is to, you know, love them at a distance and to not gossip about them, to not talk to other people about them, to not spread rumors, to not even tell the truth about them necessarily. They might be perpetuating the problem. But if I go around telling everybody that they're doing it, then I'm adding to that as well. But if we're loving each other, we're letting those things go. We're not holding on to those things. And as I've mentioned before, you know, so many of the things that Christians have bickered about over the years, so many of the arguments and the controversies have been over, you know, they've just been over things that, I mean, it's childish, a lot of it, really. You look at it and you think, how could anybody really spend so much time arguing over something like that? But it's so easy to get that, you know, you just get that feeling that you're right and that person's wrong, and you've got to make sure that everybody knows they're wrong and they know they're wrong. And what is that? That's pride. We've got to learn to just, well, just okay. We'll just let that go. It's not worth fighting for. It's not worth fighting over. There's some things we have to fight for. But if we're fighting against something, you know, really, we fight against unbelief. We fight against sin. We fight against those kinds of things. We're not to fight with each other. And it's when the church loves, that's when the world looks on and doesn't really have anything to say. I can't really argue. So Simon Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, where are you going?" And Jesus answered him, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterward." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake." Peter was a great man. He, I'm sure, meant that with all of his heart. But like so many, Peter didn't know himself all that well. He thought he would lay down his life for Jesus. And that's the way he felt. But we know the story that it wasn't very long before Peter was denying that he even knew the Lord. You know, self-confidence, you can be sure of this. An area where you have self-confidence is an area where you will eventually fall. You know, the person who says, "I would never do that. I'd never fall to that. I could never..." The Bible warns us, "If any man thinks he stands, let him take heed lest he fall." Now, I believe that I can stand, but I can stand by the grace of God. I don't stand because of me. I don't stand because Brian Broderson could never do that. No way. I'm above that. I'm far too righteous for anything like that. You ever hear me talking like that? Shoot me or something. Because I'm shooting myself. that's what happens. When I think that I'm immune, man, that's when I am in a dangerous place. And Peter thought, "There is no way. What do you mean? Lord, I would die for you. I would die for you." And I'm sure in his heart that Peter absolutely meant that, but he didn't know himself. He thought one thing about himself, but something else was actually true. And the truth was, he was weak. He thought he was strong, and he was actually weak. Better to think you're weak, because if you think you're weak, then you'll be strong, because then you'll be depending on the Lord's strength and not your own. You think you're strong, what does that say? It says you're depending on yourself. And that's always going to lead to a problem. So Jesus answered him, "Will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly, I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me 3 times. Now it's interesting. One commentator pointed this out. And I thought, yeah, there's probably something to that. He said, you notice from this point on, in this discourse that took place, in this exchange between Jesus and his disciples, Peter never said another word. Now, that's quite unusual for Peter, because Peter was always, you know, speaking up, getting himself in trouble. But John records not another thing from Peter. This probably was weighing heavily upon him. He probably thought, how could Jesus have said that to me? What is he talking about? And, you know, I mean, there's a possibility Peter missed everything else that Jesus actually went on to say. Could you imagine sitting there with Jesus Christ and he just says to you, "You're going to deny me." And then he goes on to talk about something else. "Well, what would you do?" You'd be saying, "I'm going to deny him. Why did he say that?" And, you know, all of this stuff that would have been going on through Peter's thinking process at that point. Jesus goes on to encourage him. Peter might have even missed that. But having said that, he says, "Let not your heart be troubled." He told Peter on another occasion, Satan has desired you to sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for you. And after you're converted, strengthen your brethren. The devil wanted to get at Peter. The Lord was going to give the devil a little bit of leeway with Peter in order to bring him down, to break him, to humble him so he could really use him the way he wanted to. But in looking at this in closing, what are the main lessons? That we're to love each other. We're to serve each other. We're to love each other with a love that is ready to lay down its life. You know, the world tells you and me to serve yourself, to love yourself, to live for yourself. Do everything for yourself. But what the world doesn't tell you is that in doing so, you will be a miserable person. But that's the truth. And anybody who's lived that life knows that that's a truth, because you can't do enough for yourself. The human heart is like a bottomless pit. The more you put in, it doesn't change anything. You just keep pouring everything imaginable in there. It doesn't change a thing. It doesn't satisfy. It doesn't fulfill. It's a bottomless pit. There's no way to fill it. And that's what the self-life really comes down to. It's an attempt to do what cannot be done. It's an attempt to find fulfillment and satisfaction apart from God. So many people are fooled into thinking that that's where the answer is. But the answer is, as we looked previously, the answer is in losing your life. When you lose it, that's when you find it. When you start living for the Lord, that's when satisfaction comes. When you start serving God and serving His people and doing His work, man, that's when you are filled up. Cheryl was saying to me today, she said, you know that feeling like after you've shared the Lord with somebody, or you've taught a Bible study, and or you've just ministered, and you know, you've known that the Lord has been with you. And she said, you know that feeling of just absolute and total fulfillment? I said, yeah, I know that feeling. That's a great feeling. You can't get that in the world. That is not available. It's not even possible. But as we serve Jesus, as we love Him, as we serve one another, as we love one another, that's where we find all of that fulfillment, all that joy, all that peace. And that's also when the world looks on and says, that's cool, that's great. Look what's happening over there with those Christians. I want to be part of that. Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Isn't that something? The world says, oh, you got to get. You got to receive. Jesus said, no, it's actually more blessed to give. And we find it's true. To serve the Lord, to serve each other, to love others, it is a more blessed thing. And may God help us to do it.
For the month of September, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled Found Faithful by Elizabeth Skoglund. Do you need a word of encouragement? Then here's a book for you. In Found Faithful, you'll read about the trials and tribulations of eight heroes of the faith. C.S. Lewis, Charles Spurgeon, and Amy Carmichael, just to name a few. When you read Found Faithful, you'll discover that they had real struggles with physical, spiritual, and emotional hurdles. Elizabeth Skoglund helps you to find them to be real people, accessible, and thoroughly faithful to Christ. This book titled Found Faithful by Elizabeth Skoglund is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order this book titled Found Faithful by Elizabeth Skoglund. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.